Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio. Mino Studio is a pre- and post-production facility for all of your audio needs. Mino Studio's founder is an accredited audio engineer with top 40 and indie album credits. With over 30 years of music industry experience, Mino Studio can take your podcast from idea to reality. Contact Mino Studio at minostudio777@gmail.com for more information. That's minostudio777@gmail.com.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Well, hello, old dogs. Wow, this is great. We're so excited to have you listening to this show. Before we start with the interview, I just wanted to say a couple of things. First, thank you. Thank you for listening to us. Thank you for taking the time. We know you're busy and taking the time to listen to our show and participate. We are so grateful for it. I want to tell you, too, that we'll be releasing our podcast on a regular basis on Monday mornings, unless, let's say, there's a holiday. We still may release it on Monday, but generally Monday mornings, you should be able to wake up in the morning and be able to download the podcast for that week. I also wanted to just invite you to visit our website, olddogsreinetwork.com. Of course, dog spelled D-A-W-G-S. Anytime you want to come by. There's a blog there. We have a lot of articles and information that would be of use for you in looking into real estate investing. I have a list of my top real estate books that are a great place to get started on the education process, and a lot of other resources that you'll be able to download or read or have access to, including our podcast, which will be available soon on our website. I also want to announce, too, that we're going to be doing a separate podcast that will come out on Fridays. We call it Fun Fact Fridays. And Fun Fact Fridays will be special broadcasts that will purvey important real estate investing messages addressing key terms, concepts, and strategies pertinent to your real estate investing success. Subjects like, what is cap rate and why is it important? Or five tips for getting bank funding faster. These brief 5 to 10 minute broadcasts will provide a condensed, easy to understand, bite-sized picture of things you need to know to grow your real estate investments and or business. So be watching. You're on, you can't watch here, we're on a broadcast, but listen and check into our broadcast to see those and download them. Hopefully we'll have a whole library eventually of some key information that will be helpful for you that I'll be presenting again on Fridays only. So that's it. Again, thank you so much for following the show, for downloading and listening. Gosh, we've already had amazing response. Many of you have gone to iTunes and subscribed to the podcast, downloaded the episodes, rated them, and we've had almost 100% response of 5-star ratings, as well as some great reviews that you have written. We thank you for that, and that will help us to also increase our visibility as we try to reach out to more people that have a need and interest in real estate investing. So we thank you for that, and just invite you to hang out with us and continue to be a part of the network. Thank you, and God bless. Susan Lassiter-Lyons, really excited. She's an extremely knowledgeable woman who has not only background in real estate investing, but also a variety of different areas, including marketing, financial services, banking. So this is going to be a great interview. We've got some great topics that we're going to be discussing here. But first, let me tell you a little bit about Susan. She is a number one Amazon best-selling author of Getting the Money, The Simple System for Getting Private Money for Your Real Estate Deals. In fact, this is how I first got introduced to her, as I read this book and absolutely loved it. She began investing in real estate in 1994 by forming a small syndicate, the Lien Lords, to pool $2,500 in capital to purchase tax liens at auctions. Since that modest start, she has participated in more than 600 transactions as an investor, broker, lender, syndicator, and advisor. She has over 800 properties valued at approximately $75 to $80 million. She has managed real estate hedge funds, syndicates, including multifamily equity offerings in a 506D private equity mortgage pool to make hard money loans. She's educated more than 10,000 students who have collectively raised hundreds of millions of dollars in private money, closed on thousands of properties, and improved their lives and communities. She has also raised over $30 million in debt and equity partners to fund hundreds of deals. She loves wearing flip-flops, teaching, and sharing what she knows through online training programs, workshops, and coaching, and lives each day to have fun and create value. Doesn't she sound like fun? This is great. I'm so excited to have Susan Lassiter-Lyons with us.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you very much for having me. I just had to giggle at that part because I'm actually sitting here in my office wearing flip-flops today.
I love it.
So I was like, yeah, remind myself I do. And just one small, just, you know, correction in the intro, which was very, very gracious, by the way. Thank you so much for that. It's 800 units, not 800 properties worth 75 to 80 million. I wouldn't want anybody to get the mistaken impression. I have 800 individual properties. That's multifamily units. Yeah.
Big mistake. Yeah. Units or doors, right? As we say.
Doors. Yeah, exactly.
And sometimes they'll say that and they'll think literally I have this big, you know, warehouse with all these doors in them. Great, Bill. What are you doing with those doors?
Yeah, well, right.
Let's hope I'm making some money. No. thanks for correcting that. Well, we are really, really excited. And I think that, I'd like to, you know, I kind of gave you an overview of your background, but yeah. I would, you know, like you to kind of talk about how you got into real estate investing. You got a great background that we'd love you to share with us.
Yeah, you bet. I started first investing in real estate in 1994. I went to work in the car rental business while I was in college. When I was 19, I started with Dollar Rent-A-Car. I was with Dollar Rent-A-Car for about 5 years before I went across the street at the old Stapleton Airport in Denver, Colorado, to go to work for Hertz Rent-A-Car. And I was at Hertz for about 11 years. And, you know, it's that old corporate story. I was very close to my grandmother. She raised me until I was 6. And she came from the Depression era. And her view of life was you go to work for a corporation, preferably a Fortune 100 corp, which I did because they were owned by Ford. And work your way to the top of the corporate ladder and you stay there until you retire. And so I bought into that for a lot of years, worked my way up literally to the top of the corporate ladder at Hertz, found myself in Park Ridge, New Jersey, in a very luxurious corporate headquarters, but I kind of looked around and decided that that lifestyle wasn't the lifestyle that I wanted. I was a national sales trainer, and I was on the road about 3 weeks a month, just traveling to different destination cities in North America, training the trainers in those areas to train the counter reps how to sell all those extra things that nobody ever wants to buy at the car rental counter, like the insurances and the gas options.
Oh, yeah. My favorite things when I'm at the counter.
Yeah. So you can thank me for that. Sorry. anything we could monetize, we totally did. That was my job. But, you know, I'd always had an entrepreneurial side to me. You know, it started when I was young, selling candy, selling, finding anything I could find and selling it door to door, selling. I even had a babysitting syndicate when I was little. I didn't like babysitting anymore. So I just kind of ran the business. I rounded up all my little friends in the neighborhood and handled all the scheduling and took about half of their profits. So I think that set me up for multifamily syndication and real estate at a very young age, at least learning the basics and fundamentals of syndication. But I can trace my interest in real estate back to a very specific event. I was on the road. I think I was in Chicago in some hotel room watching TV, and a Carlton Sheets commercial came on. Do you remember Carlton Sheets?
Yeah, late night. Exactly. He's like a hero of late night there.
Oh, yeah. So I watched the whole infomercial and this whole, you know, buy real estate with no money down. And it's like, okay, you know, so I'll order that $19.95 package, include the shipping and handling, but wait, there's more package.
Yeah, they'll throw in the Popeil pocket fisherman along with that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, that's basically how I got my start. And I, you know, I gotten a few deals under my belt, really hadn't settled on a strategy yet. Knew that, this might be a way for me to forge my entrepreneurial path in the world, and, decided to go for it. So I left Hertz in 1997 and, moved back to Colorado, which is where my home is. I live in Denver. And I decided that I was just basically going to create an entire business with different, what I call divisions around real estate investing. So I had my own real estate investing that I was doing, and I was pursuing lease options at that time, and also doing some single family and residential multifamily rehabbing, like rehabbing triplexes and duplexes and quads. You know, as any real estate investor knows, usually the number one constraint in our business is the financing. Mm-hmm. And so I really made it my business to become a master of real estate finance, specifically for investment. And I opened a mortgage company in 2000, working exclusively with real estate investors to provide, you know, brokered financing from conventional banks. We had guidance lines that we set up with local lenders that enabled us to do some kind of cool loans for real estate investors. And then I actually raised about $5 million to put together a private equity fund to become a hard money lender here in my market as well. And things were going great. And then 2008 happened. And, you know, it was a really scary time to be a real estate investor and a really scary time to be in the mortgage business, since we were experiencing a severe economic downturn that could probably be traced to the mortgage business specifically. And so I made the very difficult decision to close my mortgage company in 2008. That was in September of 2008. And I had already had a trip scheduled to go to Mexico for vacation over Thanksgiving of that year. And the 2 week vacation ended up being 2 months in Mexico, just laying on the beach, like crying and drinking margaritas in that order, trying to figure out like what's going to be the next phase of my life.
Yikes.
So I decided, you know, I'm not going to go back to corporate, right? I'm going to stick with what I know. I'm going to leverage what I know. I, am an expert in real estate finance and, raising private capital for real estate. So, I focused on, teaching those strategies to real estate investors and implementing them in my own investing business. And so, you know, here I am several years later, started the training and coaching business in 2009. You know, like you said, we've trained over 10,000 real estate investors. They've raised, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in private capital from individual investment partners for real estate projects all across the country, including Canada. And that's kind of my mantra. What you said, have fun and create value. That's what I'm about every day.
Oh, I love it.
Thanks.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned Carlton Sheets, and I thought, wasn't he sort of no money down?
Sort
of his. I noticed you got into funding these things and raising money. I mean, was that kind of like your beginning when you're looking at your first deals that you were going to go in there with no money, or you were using your own money to start off?
Yeah, well, to start, I wanted to pursue no money down. And it, you know, when I started, it wasn't that I had no money. In fact, I was really I was in a very exciting situation. I was very lucky to be working at Hertz as an executive when Ford spun us off and we had an IPO. And, you know, the employees got to buy in at the strike price. I think we bought in at like $26 a share and it immediately went to $42 within an hour of trading.
Nice.
Yeah. So, I was fine in terms of, you know, money. But I think for me, the reason why I started with the no money down strategies, and specifically the strategy of lease options, was that I just wanted to test out these strategies because I was afraid of losing money, right? It's all about risk mitigation. And I had a big fear when I was just starting out that, oh man, I'm going to make a mistake. I'm going to, you know, sink a bunch of money into a house that is either going to be upside down or I'm not going to be able to get my cash back out of. So for me, while I was kind of educating myself and creating my systems and processes to run the business, it just felt safer to start with no money down strategies.
Right. And why tie up your own personal capital when, you know, if you don't have to?
Yeah, right.
You, before the crash and the 2008 that just devastated many people, did you have a lot of properties at that time? Did you have to get rid of properties? Did they make it through that period? How did you handle your holdings at that time, your real estate holdings?
Yeah, that's a great question. I had, and that's kind of where the crying and the drinking came in. I was very heavily invested at that time in the residential multifamily rehabbing. And so my whole strategy was to acquire duplexes, triplexes, and quads here in the Denver area and in the, you know, kind of surrounding suburban areas, rehab them, and then rent them out and hold them in my portfolio long term. Well, I would say, you know, I was able to unload, and by unload, I mean sell at a break even, like the majority of my holdings at that time. There were two properties. One was a triplex and one was a duplex. They had lost 50% of their value seemingly overnight. So they were very much upside down. Mm. Luckily, I had refinanced my these deals. So my whole strategy was then and still is to acquire properties using private capital from outside investors and then do a refinance or what we call a takeout loan into permanent financing using local portfolio lenders, just those community banks that underwrite and service loans in their own portfolio instead of having to follow the rules of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and, you know, securitize them and sell them off into the secondary markets. And so I ended up with these two properties that just wouldn't go. The duplex, I ended up offering owner financing on. I sold it with no money down. I just wanted to move that title into someone else's name. So I offered 100% seller financing. I just did a wrap mortgage on that and sold it off to a fellow investor who held it until the value did come back and they were able to refinance it and get me paid off. And the triplex, we did a deed in lieu with the bank. It was a lost cause, you know, and wow. It was one of those things where it was a strategic business decision. I didn't want a foreclosure. But I also didn't want to have to subsidize a property like this that was severely underwater. And, you know, unfortunately, the rents at that time weren't even enough to cover the mortgage payment. So we agreed to a deed in lieu with the bank and moved on from that. So, you know, I consider myself fortunate. I worked with so many really smart, very successful real estate investors around that period who just lost their portfolios, you know, majority of them to foreclosure. And I feel like, you know, I came through it relatively unscathed, but for that one deed in lieu. So I think we did okay.
Now, from that experience, do you feel, I mean, you still have properties, you're still an investor, but are you looking at things differently in the way that you approach your investing now in light of the, you know, what happened in the market and what may be ahead in the market again, many people are predicting in terms of how you're buying properties and what parameters you're setting for yourself?
Yeah. So for me, I made the decision to work in commercial investment only, meaning I very much wanted to get out of the residential investment environment and move over to commercial. You know, here's the thing. On the commercial side, just from an underwriting perspective, it's very much the value of the property and the purchase decision is very much driven by the debt coverage ratio of that property. So if you expect to have a property financed by, you know, any type of a lender, private or otherwise on the commercial side, that thing has to have, it has to be able to cover the debt, you know, by a certain ratio. Like most traditional banks look for a 1.25 debt coverage ratio, which just means that the income from that property is going to be able to cover the expenses, including the mortgage, by a margin of like 25%. So it's forced cash flow, right? Mm-hmm. I wish that investment properties on the residential side were underwritten that same way, because I fundamentally believe that that would save a lot of real estate investors from purchasing mistakes. You know, the way that residential investment properties are still underwritten, it's the debt to income ratio of the individual. It has absolutely nothing to do with the property. The property could, you know, be producing zero income. But as long as, you know, I had a job and a W-2 income that proved that I could make that mortgage payment each month in addition to my other obligations, then the bank would say, fine, we give it our blessing. That wouldn't happen on the commercial side.
Right. And I think that the advantage to most investors, too, is the fact that the banks are looking at it as a business, you know, whereas you look at a single family residence and it's all on the buyer and everything is. So you also have the advantage with a commercial property, too, that you can adjust the value of that property just by doing anything from minor upgrades to raising rents and so forth. And you have more control on the value of that property, whereas single family residents, you know, they're looking at comps. They're looking at what other homes are selling for. So it does give you more of a hedge in tougher economic times, I think.
And honestly, you hit the nail on the head with regard to, you know, the value. And when you find yourself in a situation, you have residential properties that, because, you know, foreclosures are happening all around you and values are dropping like a lead balloon, you know, you have an appraiser that says, yeah, this triplex that used to be worth $300,000 is now worth $150,000, but I still owe $300,000, right? It's like, wow, that's, I have zero control over the value of that property. Whereas if I have a 10-unit apartment building, you're right. The value of that property is primarily driven by the income that it produces. And honestly, you know, the income for the most part is going to be, you know, pretty insulated from what's happening to residential real estate around it. If anything, I found that the kind of downturn in the residential market led to an increase in value on the multifamily side because it led to lower vacancy rates and it also led to a little bit higher rents. So
yeah, that's true. High demand is
yeah, it's all supply and demand.
Yeah, people are going to, even if they're renting a home, a single family home, they may have to downgrade and move into an apartment, just to be able to adjust to the loss of income. And I think that it would create more demand in that kind of situation. People still need a place to live. They're always going to need a place to live.
Right.
But apartments are going to be generally less than renting a three-bedroom home, for example. So you're primarily in commercial and apartments for the most part?
Yeah. Multifamily, what I call syndicates, right, which mm-hmm. is basically a group investment. So I usually pull together a group of investment partners, and we target multifamily properties, typically in the Southeast and in the Midwest. That's where the majority of our holdings are now. And I also do some a little bit of private lending of my own funds. I don't really look at like a cash for keys or a foreclosure and a resale as a failure necessarily, because I'm still making money.
Right, right. So, I mean, you either have a property, you can sell the note.
Yeah,
that's great. Do you have a certain ROI in general, let's say on those 10 that you bought, those 10 non-performing mortgages, that you know you're going to get out of that going into it?
You know, when I do these deals, I should say just about any deal that I do, my personal goal is at least a 20% cash on cash return.
Okay.
And you know, that's very common to hear. It's sometimes difficult to achieve, but I find that with the multifamily syndicates that I do, that are very highly leveraged with investor capital and with the note buys that we do, which are very deeply discounted because they're non-performing, that's pretty easy to achieve.
That's great. I look at it, and to me, just on the surface, I go, gee, that seems like a lot of work. You've got to work with these individual homeowners, but it sounds like you've got it down to a science here.
Yeah. You know, I'm really big on systems and process, and mm-hmm. I have this thing that I've just always had in any business that I've had, and we call it process documents. And it's just a way that I can plug someone into my business very quickly from a training perspective. And those process documents will do like anywhere, you know, from like 50 to 75% of the heavy lifting for me in terms of training. Mm-hmm. Now, the fundamental, I guess, you know, thing that I'm after in my business is automation. And the greatest definition of automation that I heard, and this was from a guy named Ryan Dice, who's active in online marketing, but he said one time that his definition of automation isn't that technology does it. It's not necessarily automated by technology. His definition of automation is that he doesn't have to do it. Right? So when we're talking about, you know, especially from the note buying side, if I enter into the process and our system of getting these deals to start reperforming, we have a very documented, very detailed process that we follow. And it's going to be either somebody that works for me, you know, here in my real estate business, or sometimes it can be the loan servicing company or the note servicing company that I hire that will handle those activities for us. You know, we just onboard the notes that we've purchased to their system, and that becomes part of their activities as to, you know, the outreach to get them to reperform.
Oh, great. I love that. Yeah, and I noticed that in your book, especially in the marketing side of things, of just getting things automated and setting up systems that allow for you to cover more ground and not be actively involved, which is great.
Yeah, you know, it's all about leverage, and mm-hmm. leverage is what we seek in real estate investing, right? We seek leverage by using funding, financing that we get from banks or individual investment partners. That's a way for us to leverage that capital to be able to acquire properties that we profit from. And I'm just like, you know, that concept of leverage is pretty apparent. The concept of, you know, people leverage it's what you do in business. You know, if I was in a situation where I had to literally sell an hour of my time, and I was, you know, I think of my sister-in-law, who's a massage therapist, mm-hmm. right? She gets paid because she actually puts her hands on someone's body and, you know, needs their muscles. Mm-hmm. And so she gives them a massage for an hour, and then they pay her for an hour of her time. That's not leverage at all.
Yeah. You don't massage, you don't get paid, right?
Exactly. And I never, after 2008 happened and I went through the experience that I did, I vowed that I was going to put myself in a situation where I had passive income coming in, whether it was directly a result of my personal time or not.
Just from what you've been providing, the information you've been providing, I have a couple of questions. Again, looking at our audience here, there may be some people out there that are on fixed incomes, and mm-hmm. anything could have happened. There were those that had their whole retirement nest egg in the market when 2008 hit, or some of these other sort of mini crashes, and may not have the funds that they were hoping to get them through their retirement years. And they may be relying on Social Security or maybe a small pension. Now, what kind of advice would you give to these people? They're looking at real estate investing and they're thinking, this could be the thing to help me get that extra $1,500, $2,000, $3,000 a month, whatever their goal may be, to be able to get over the hump here. Yet they don't have a lot to invest. What would you tell them sort of as first steps here, what they might want to try to do to prepare for going into real estate investing? I know we talked no money down aspect, which is real, and a lot of people do it. But you're very strategic in your way of, you know, building up funds for real estate. And I just thought, what advice would you have for that person?
That's a great question. And I actually work with a couple of people who are in that situation, people who are, you know, one woman specifically who lost everything in 2008. And, you know, she's disabled. So she's on disability income. And another gentleman, you know, who's retired and kind of seeking the same thing on a fixed income. And I love that you said that no money down strategies are real, because mm-hmm. that's an important thing I want people to know. You'll see all sorts of things online about, you know, from people who have some other agenda, right, that they're usually pushing, that will try to tell you that there's no such thing as a no money down deal. But I'm here to tell you that there are absolutely such things as no money down deals, whether it's from, it's a truly a strategy where you don't have to put any of your own money, put any money into it, or also a strategy where you don't have to put any of your own money into it, right? So if we focus on, let's say, a true no money down strategy, I teach a certain process on the multifamily side that we refer to as I call it the master lease option method.
Right.
And, I have a guy who came to work with me in 2010, his name's Bill. And he was like, look, I was doing, you know, residential lease options. And basically with residential lease options, what you do is you go to a seller, a motivated seller, and say, look, I'll, you know, lease this house from you for this amount of money, right? Usually it is a rental payment, like say $1,500 a month. And then I'll also give you an option to purchase this property at an agreed upon price at some point in the future. And then the job of the real estate investor is to go out and lease that property to another tenant, or what we call a tenant buyer, and you're hoping that you'll be able to rent it to them for more than what that underlying lease payment is to the owner. So we're hoping now, if we're paying that owner $1,500 a month, that we might be able to re-lease it out to someone else for maybe $1,700 a month. So you're making $200 in the spread. That's a very highly leveraged, true no money down scenario. And we do that on the commercial side as well with smaller apartment buildings. And it can be very lucrative. You know, Bill has utilized that multifamily strategy for master lease option to acquire 68 apartment buildings since 2010.
Really?
And, wow. Yeah. And he basically, the way that he's profiting is he goes in and it's the same deal. He agrees to pay a certain master lease payment to become the master tenant of a property to that owner. And then he goes about increasing the income of the property and decreasing the expenses of the property so that that value goes up exponentially. And then he's able to profit in the spread income between, you know, the difference between what he collects in income and what he has to pay on that master lease. And so that's a true no money down strategy. We also see wholesaling, right? If you wanted to just become a matchmaker, you could, you know, if you have more time than money, which a lot of retired people do, mm-hmm. then you can, you know, spend time developing lead sources, free lead sources, to be able to get access to properties that other real estate investors might want to purchase. And then it's just a question of putting these properties under contract and then flipping the contract to another investor. And, you know, it's an easy way to generate, you know, a couple of thousand dollars just for identifying a good deal and flipping it to an investor who's actually going to, you know, bring capital and close on that property. So those are some really great ways that people can get started, true no money down. Now, on the other side of it, you know, you can raise capital. Just because you're not putting any of your own money into this property, right, doesn't mean that you can't raise capital and utilize investment partners in a deal with you and put their capital to work.
Yeah, now that's a question on that. Let's say you are going to somebody and they'll ask you, you know, well, if this property is so great, what have you, why aren't you putting your own money in? How do you field a question like that?
That's, you know, I've done hundreds of deals with private investment partners. Nobody has ever asked me that question before. Usually I say, you know, I'm the one, if I were to get asked that question, which nobody has ever said, if that deal is so good, why aren't you putting your own money into it? But if I were to get asked the question, I would say, you know, I'm actually syndicating this deal, right? I'm leveraging other people's capital. I'm providing an opportunity for you to make money on this investment. My capital or my contribution to this deal is going to be in terms of kind of my sweat equity, right? The time that I spend in analyzing the deal, putting the deal together, managing the property once we've closed on it and so forth. So I think that in terms of capital contribution, you know, it's kind of like when I was when I had my mortgage company, and I would, you know, kind of leverage myself into some of these larger deals that I would help fund, you know, I would get a check at closing for my mortgage broker's fee, right, which is a certain percentage of that purchase price. And then I would just turn around and reinvest that back into the property as my capital contribution. So I think there's, you know, something that's very much accepted, especially in real estate investing, that you should be paid for the work that you do, and that work has value and that work can be monetized.
That's great. No, that's a perfect answer. I think that's, you know, because there, like you said, there are a lot of people that are doing this, and finding good deals is worth a lot in itself. And
it's huge.
And there's, you know, there's always a, you know, question of skin in the game when anything you do. But I think, you know, you come in with a great deal and you could present the deal for what it is. Mm-hmm. I think people would be foolish not to get involved and, you know, be their loss, and to be hung up on the fact that, well, you're not putting cash in this deal, shouldn't really be a factor if all the numbers speak for themselves.
Right. Yeah. We get, you know, and when I work with people who are raising capital for their deals, if they're, you know, if they're not making a capital, a monetary, you know, investment or capital contribution into the deal, the question's very rarely asked. You know, people recognize that you're doing all the work to put together the investment, so that you can pay them the return. It's very similar to a bank. I mean, banks don't have 100% loans anymore, but they used to, you know, and it was just common that, hey, even if we're going to fund this thing up to 100% of its value, you are going to be making money from this, and the money that you're going to make from it is not only going to be able to pay the underlying mortgage, but you're expected to make a profit from it as well.
Well, this is probably going to become a two-part episode.
Cool.
Because there's so much great stuff here, and I don't want to just cram it all into one. So I have absolutely just had a blast here with you, Susan.
And no, thanks, Bill. Me too.
Gosh,
I love it.
Really, really fun.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.